Good afternoon. This is Loretta Bertelot at the Tulsa Historical Society and Museum. The date is November 5th, 2021. My guest is Janice Dobson Blankenship. I met Janice about 50 years ago when we began teaching in Tulsa schools together. And until just the last couple of weeks, I've never heard more of her story. I know she lived part of her life in India, and I told her she had a very interesting background in living overseas and in education, and who knows what else I'll hear here. But Janice, thank you for coming in today.
Thank you.
And I'm going to let you tell your story.
Okay. All right. I'm going to start with my great-grandfather, Andrew Silas Newton Dobson, who was a young teacher from Tennessee, and he was conscripted into the Southern Army during the Civil War and worked as a bookkeeper in the Army since he could read and write. His company lost a battle, and all of them were sent to a northern prisoner of war camp in Wisconsin until the end of the war. There, many of the soldiers died from all of the stuff in the lack of food, not very good hygiene and stuff in the prisoner of war camp, and he helped many fellow soldiers in their time of trouble with their sickness and starvation. When he got out of the prison camp, he decided to become a doctor, and he settled in Broyles-Ville Township in Tennessee. He was an elder in the Presbyterian Church called the Salem Church in Broyles-Ville, and went to and supported Washington College, which was nearby. He got married, had six children. The three boys became Presbyterian ministers, and the three girls married Presbyterian ministers. My grandfather was one of the boys who became a Presbyterian minister, and my dad also became a Presbyterian minister and then a missionary to India. On my mother's side, her father, William McKelvey, who was also a Presbyterian minister, lived in Wisconsin and became, with his wife, a missionary to India at the turn of the 20th century. I figure it had to be God's calling, because who would go in all those Victorian clothes to a foreign country that was so very hot? My parents met at Wheaton College in Illinois, which was a church college. My mom's family of four siblings had lived in India with their missionary parents and went to Woodstock School in the foothills of the Himalayan mountains. When my mom met my dad, they decided to get married, and he finished seminary at Princeton Theological Seminary in Princeton, New Jersey, while she worked in Chicago. She remembers walking down the street and hearing cars backfire and everyone hitting the deck, thinking it was Al Capone and the other gang shooting at each other. After their marriage, he became a chaplain in North Carolina at Woodrow Wilson Farm School College. They applied for a visa for India and for the Presbyterian Church to sponsor them to go to North India so they could be missionaries near my mom's parents. After their first 6 years in India, spreading God's word in villages and with three children, they came back to the U.S. for a year of furlough. Furlough is when missionaries come back to their home country to rest, rejuvenate, and study every 5 to 6 years. I was born in May during that year, 1947, while Dad was away at a presbytery conference. My mom was staying with my grandparents in West Palm Beach, so I was born at Good Samaritan Hospital there in West Palm Beach. When they headed back to India with four kids on a ship going the Pacific route through Hong Kong, and it was soon after World War II. This time they were assigned to Ludhiana and later Ferozpur, two cities in the Punjab. My siblings went to Woodstock School as boarders in second or third grade, just as my mom and her siblings had. They would start the school year in boarding in March, and by the time I was there, Mom stayed and worked with Dad in the city where they lived on the plains, where it gets hot. Then she would come take everyone out of boarding in May and live in a house on the hill while everyone went as day scholars. During this time, there was a 10-day holiday when Dad would come visit, or he would take the family on a holiday. Then in September, Mom would go back to live where Dad was working, and the kids would go back into boarding until the three-month holiday that started in late November.
Was that winter time?
Yes,
in the mountains?
It was. And so we left when it was snowy there, and went back to the plains where it was cooler. So it was more healthy for us. One of the things my mom had told other missionary parents was that keeping the children down on the plains where it was so hot was detrimental to the children. Many of them died because of the heat. And so being in boarding school in the mountains was a better solution than having your children die because it was so hot.
During the summertime.
During the summertime.
Okay.
Right. And that's why they had the school year was really from March to November, where it was cool. It was hotter in the plains where the dads were working.
Do you have any idea about how many children were in the boarding school?
It varied depending on when people went on furlough, because this was mostly a missionary school when I went. But at times, there were like 35 kids in a classroom.
For how many grades?
For each grade.
Through grade 12?
Yeah.
Okay.
It was a kindergarten through grade 12, although most of the boarding kids didn't start boarding until about second grade.
Okay.
Which is kind of early, but...
So was your mom in the mountains while you were in boarding school?
She was in the mountains when she pulled us out for being day scholars. And so we spent about 6 months with our parents total and 6 months without.
Okay.
Okay.
That's unusual.
Yeah.
I mean, not for there, but for
right.
here.
Yes, it is. So in March, we'd go back up to Woodstock and go into boarding again, and it would be the whole cycle. Most of the families at the time were missionary children from United States or Europe, though we did have some Indian and Asian students there as well. After we returned to India for my second grade, and when I got back there, I should have started second grade, but they had so many kids in my class that they wouldn't let me start in the middle of the year. And so my mom took me back to the plains and homeschooled me for until I could get in at the beginning of third grade in the next March. Dad was assigned by the Presbyterian Church in northern India to Dehradun, which was just about 20 miles down the hill from Woodstock. It took about an hour and a half or 2 hours to get up the hill by car, even though it was only about 20 miles. There were lots of...
Switchbacks,
right, exactly. At one point, he did his job as the pastor, director of the Christian Boys School, and director of the Christian Girls School in Dehradun. And then one day a week, he would drive his motor scooter up to Woodstock to teach the Woodstock High School band and help direct the band at concerts and basketball games, since he was a good trumpet player, so they thought he could be a good band leader as well. Woodstock School is in the foothills of the Himalayas, and was organized in 1854 by a group of English women to promote female education in what was then known as the Protestant Girls' School to produce teachers. Landour and Mussoorie, the two towns, made up a hill station where British soldiers went for R&R in the 1830s and 40s. It's a beautiful area of about 7,500 feet above sea level. Many private boarding schools are in this area of northern India. In 1874, the Presbyterian Board of Missions took over the school, and it became mainly a boarding school for female children of missionaries. Later, it became a co-ed boarding school where my mom and her brother and sisters went to school. Woodstock became a K through 12 grade school that had curriculum for both American and the British Indian curriculum. The school year began in June, ended for the 3 months in November, and started up again in March. Of my mom's siblings who went to Woodstock, she and two siblings ended up going back to India as missionaries. So my cousins went to the school at Woodstock with me as well. The alumni of Woodstock are quite close-knit, as we lived in close quarters for our elementary through high school years, and many in my class now Zoom monthly, as we also have yearly reunions in the United States, as well as other places around the world. Now that not many missionaries are left in India, Woodstock has many students from India and around the world. It's listed as one of the best international boarding schools in the world and is accredited by the U.S. Accreditation Board.
May I ask why there are not as many missions there now?
After we left in 1960, they just, in the India, there were quite a few Christians in India that were taking over the pastorates and stuff, and also the government was not letting as many people come in as just missionaries.
Okay.
They could come in if they were helping with agriculture or something else, but not just mainly pastors and stuff like that.
When's the last reunion you went to with your
classmates? Well, I Zoom with my classmates. I was on a Friday, once a month on a Friday evening, which was just in October. But the last actual reunion I went to, probably was about 8 or 10 years ago. A lot of times they have it in California, and then the next year they do it on the East Coast, and they very rarely have it here in the middle of the United States. But my sister and cousin and I remember went to one in Colorado. That was a lot of fun, and saw quite a few people. So, and this year we did it on Zoom.
Oh, because of COVID.
Right, because of COVID. Right, so I was part of that. So the campus there at Woodstock, and you'll have a picture of this in there, has the buildings have red roofs, metal roofs, but it's split into five main areas. There's an area where the classes are, where they have classrooms and a assembly place that where we had chapel and plays and things. Then the living for the elementary girls was close by. And then the elementary boys, high school boys, and high school girls had their dorms farther down the hill. It's quite a long but beautiful walk for those kids. Homes on the hills around the house that the parents who'd come to take their children out of boarding were normal houses with kitchens and bedrooms and dens and stuff, and they were also owned by the different boards of mission. Like the Methodists all lived in one area on the hill, the Presbyterians lived in one area, the Assemblies of God lived in a different area, Baptists in their area. So it was kind of, depending on where you kind of knew what church your friends were in by where they lived.
Okay.
on the hill. There were some really famous people who visited Woodstock. The Dalai Lama came to Woodstock in 1959 when he was displaced from Tibet by the Chinese. And so he came, he has come many times to Woodstock to get some information about American education and different things like that. Pearl S. Buck, the writer, came in 1963. The Prime Minister of India, Nehru, whose nephew went to Woodstock, was also a visitor. And the teacher and high school choral director when I was in sixth and seventh grade was Vance George, who later became the San Francisco Symphony Chorus conductor for 23 years before he retired. He's still living in San Francisco.
Janice, what is the major religion in India?
The major religion is Hindu.
Okay.
And there are a lot of Muslims. And in 1947, they had partition, which is right after the British left. They decided, I don't know who they is, the Brits and the Indians and the Hindus and Muslims decided that they would split up India, and the Muslims would mainly go live in what then became Pakistan and East Pakistan, which later changed its name as well to Bangladesh. So there was a lot of fighting and horrible killing and stuff going on as people left. Muslims would try to leave India to go up to where Pakistan was, and the Pakistani Hindus would come down to live in India. And in between, there was a lot of fighting and killing, and a lot of the missionaries helped people that were in danger. We, however, were in the United States. That was right. That was the year that we were here, the year I was born. So I was in first grade, and we returned for a furlough year to live in Princeton, which is in New Jersey. My sister remembers seeing Alfred Einstein walking past our apartment in Princeton quite often. I was in first grade and really didn't know much about Einstein at the time. But that was also when we saw our dad's family when we were here on furlough, our paternal grandparents, aunt, uncle, and cousins. Dad would take the train to the Presbyterian headquarters in New York City daily while we enjoyed school and being an American, getting to watch TV and getting new records. Those were the things that were at the top of our list. Milk was terrific in America. In India, since cows are sacred for the Hindus, we had to drink goat or buffalo milk, which is much stronger in the flavor, and we didn't enjoy it as much as the cow's milk. That was a favorite in America.
So no TV in India either.
Well, they do now, but we didn't back then.
Uh-huh.
Right. Traveling from India to the U.S. and U.S. back to India, we went by ship and toured countries on the way. Flying was done in the 50s and 60s, but we always traveled by ship and visited many countries on the way. When I was a toddler, we went the Pacific route and went to Hong Kong, but usually we went the Atlantic route and stopped in Europe. So I remember visiting Egypt, Aden, Pompeii, France, England, Switzerland, Italy, Austria, Germany, and others. However, seeing the famous sites as a 6, 7, and 13-year-old isn't as interesting as seeing places as an adult. I really didn't appreciate everything as I would now if I had gone to visit again. When we returned from India to the U.S. for our last time in 1960, after doing a furlough in Princeton, Dad got a pastorate in Morrisville, Pennsylvania for 2 years before becoming an associate pastor at First Presbyterian Church in Tulsa in 1963. When we came to Tulsa, I was the last child at home and attended Tulsa Central as a junior and senior. The year before, Central High School had been listed in the McCall's magazine as one of the top 25 schools in the nation. So my dad was quick to point that out when we were fearful of coming to Oklahoma with all the teepees and things that we imagined were here.
Different kinds of Indians.
Right, right. My big experience, other than getting a great high school education at Central, was to be in the Central Days. The Days was a variety show put on by the students. It was spelled D-A-Z-E, Days. Lou Miller, a famous Tulsa dance instructor, taught a group of us juniors a tap dance so we could try out and get a part in the Days. We were so excited that we made it. But his parting words to me were that I really wasn't doing the tap dance steps properly, but I was one of the best fakers that he had ever seen.
Had you had tap dancing before?
Never. The next year as a senior, I was a walk-on hooker in a New Orleans street scene for the Days. I didn't need to learn any tap steps for that one. Some of the influential adults in Tulsa who guided me and meant a lot to me while I was in high school were Charles Schnocke and Garvin Berry. They were two businessmen who were sponsors and Sunday school teachers of the senior highs at First Presbyterian. Also, Mary Stuart Wood and Betty Payne, who worked at First Presbyterian, were great to everyone. I was in the high school, senior high school choir at First Presbyterian and made lots of friends there, and we went on summer choir trips to sing around the country. Roy and Niall Hallman were the director and organist of our choir at the time, and they became quite famous later, working in a church in Hawaii. I started my college experience at Hastings College in Hastings, Nebraska. It was a Presbyterian college. My nickname there was Tulsa. Go figure. I still remember the wonderful steaks they cooked for us at the student union every Saturday for dinner and my first taste of A1 sauce. I still love A1 sauce and steaks. As a sophomore, I became a pom-pom girl to entertain at intermissions during the football and basketball games. After my freshman year at Hastings, I got a summer job at City Service Oil Company thanks to Ed Heston, a friend of my father's and the president of Cities. While working as a mail girl, taking mail to each department in the building, that was at the time 15th and Boulder, I met Dwayne Blankenship, who worked in the art department at Cities. Before the summer was over, we had decided to get married. My parents agreed if I would continue my college education. So I left Hastings after my first semester as a sophomore and came to Tulsa University in January to further my education and to prepare for our marriage. We were to get married in June, but Dwayne got transferred soon after I got here and left for the Chicago area in March. After our marriage in June, which was at First Presbyterian, I attended North Central College in Naperville as it was close to where Dwayne was working. After 2 years, I graduated with an Illinois teaching certificate. I got a job teaching third grade in the classroom where I had done my intern teaching. The next March, Dwayne got transferred back to Tulsa, so I came back soon after, not even finishing my first year of teaching. I got a job then with St. Francis Hospital from April through August as a preschool teacher for the employees' children. Then I worked for the Tulsa Public starting at Burroughs Elementary in August of 1971. Tulsa had decided to integrate the teachers that year instead of integrating the children. So they sent many white teachers to mostly black schools. I was one of those, and that's where I met Loretta Bertolotte, who's doing this interview. We've been great friends ever since. She was teaching third grade and I was teaching science grades 3 through 6. It was a tough transition for both of us, mainly due to the cultural differences and the resentment of the parents and students that so many of their beloved teachers had been sent to South Tulsa and the new teachers had been sent from South Tulsa to North Tulsa. The next year, Tulsa Public Schools began the Burroughs Little School, where they bused South Tulsa kids, whose parents agreed to the change, to the Little School and had specially trained teachers teach this mix of ethnicities. The smart kids from Burroughs and the smart kids from South Tulsa were taught together. After the teachers for the Little School were trained, I, who had been teaching this mix of kids since August, but wasn't specially trained, was sent on to a third grade classroom at Mark Twain in West Tulsa. That was a better experience for me, and I taught there until our first son was born. I then stayed home being a mom and helping with a Mother's Day Out preschool program for a few years. After our second son was born, we moved to Broken Arrow, and I was teaching preschool 5 days a week, so I figured I might as well teach elementary school in Broken Arrow.
Okay, Janice, may I stop you just a minute?
Sure.
It was the fall of 1970 when we started teaching.
Was it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because I had my daughter the next year.
Ah, okay.
And I think you made the point that little school the next year really drained the classrooms of Burroughs.
It
did. Their top students.
Right.
So the little school project worked very well because of the students.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Right. But the kids that were taken from Burroughs that lived in the neighborhood and went to little school were their top students educationally and behaviorally. And so that left nobody, not many kids in Burroughs, the main Burroughs school, as model students for the other students.
Mm-hmm.
It was tough. Okay, so in 1978, I went back to teaching in Broken Arrow. I ended up teaching for 22 years in Broken Arrow schools. I taught about 7 years each at Park Lane Elementary in East Broken Arrow, at Sequoia Middle School and Linwood Elementary in West Broken Arrow. Although altogether, I taught 2nd, 3rd, and 5th. Self-contained meant teaching all 9 subjects, including careers and Spanish, in those grades. Then I taught 6th through 8th. I taught gifted to some 1 year. I taught reading for many years, social studies, and computers for several years when computers were new in the middle school. And then I became the assistant principal at Sequoia for 2 years and then moved to Arrowhead Elementary as principal for 9 years before retiring in June of 2011. I really enjoyed my years of teaching in Broken Arrow. When I first started teaching, we had a few special needs kids that were served in regular classes. Later, more severe disabilities were served in self-contained special ed classes. I saw teachers learning to help kids with ADD, ADHD, Tourette's, autism, emotional difficulties, among other disabilities. Public school teachers, as we know, have to learn to work with varied levels of learning and varied difficulties in children and their parents. I have found that overall, teachers love and care for their students as though they were their own. Children are their priority. After retirement from Broken Arrow Schools in 2011, I went to a part-time job at at NSU as a coordinator for student teachers. I worked with 8 to 25 students each semester, and I helped them with the requirements, the state, local, and district requirements for their full internship semester. These changed from time to time, but mostly they had to write, teach, and analyze a full unit of study, and I would help them with that, and I would also grade it. I also would go into the classroom and observe several times a semester and give suggestions for improvement of their teaching and lesson planning if needed. I fully retired after NSU graduation in May of 2020. I wish all people in America would volunteer. Helping others is important for them as well as for the people that they help. While I was principal, I volunteered for American Cancer Society's Relay for Life. I did this quite a few years when most of the public schools, companies, and organizations in Broken Arrow got together in late May to raise money for the American Cancer Society. I was on the board many years, and 1 year was chairman for the Broken Arrow Relay. We had a great time raising money for ACS. Before I fully retired, I had volunteered with LEI, Literacy Evangelism International, a Christian-based group in Tulsa that helps teach adults to read, as well as translating the Bible into languages all around the world. I also work with Tulsa City County Library, helping adults to learn to read and also to speak English better in the library's Adult Literacy and ELL program. I also helped for several years at Key Elementary in Tulsa Public as a reading partner. All of these programs help improve the literacy. Now that I'm fully retired, I volunteer at my church, Kirk of the Hills, as a Bible study leader and am in the traditional choir that sings on Sunday mornings. I've also volunteered the past year with the Tulsa Historical Museum typing up oral histories like this one. I've also joined Assistance League of Tulsa, which is an organization that raises money in order to provide school clothes for students in the Tulsa County Schools. They also help with STEM projects and give art and music grants to teachers of schools in the area.
Tell what STEM is.
STEM is science, technology. What does it be? I've lost
M's
it.
M's math.
M is math.
Engineering
and math. I should have known that. I do sometimes.
Well,
know
I
that.
Was having to do it too.
Yeah. So and then they give grants to schools, the art teachers and the music teachers also. Assistance League has a resale store called Bargains that is open Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday. That's the way they make the money for the school clothes. The great thing about this organization is that nothing goes to waste. If the items donated can't be used in their bargain store, they are given to other needy organizations like Emergency Infant Services, Fostering Connection, Life Senior Services, Mental Health Association of Oklahoma, Tulsa Day Center, and others. Even the donated clothes that aren't good enough to sell or give to the other organizations are sold to a rag man, so everything given is used in some way. I think that's pretty terrific. The Tulsa area is a great place to live and raise a family. There are so many great experiences, places to visit, and things to do. I'm so grateful that my dad ended up bringing our family here to Tulsa, and that I married a man who loved living in the Tulsa area. When we moved back from the Chicago area, my husband and I decided to stay here and got jobs so we could live, bring up our family, and worship in this wonderful community.
Thank you, Janice. I had a couple of questions as you went along.
Okay.
One is, you told me earlier that you learned to speak 3 dialects of Indian.
Yes.
Did they use that in your school, or was that in your community, in the community that you used that?
No, we spoke English at school, and we could take a class in Indian languages, but I didn't, where you could learn to read it and all. But I learned as a child, just being around everybody, I learned to speak Punjabi because we lived in the Punjab. And I learned Hindi and Urdu. Urdu is more what they speak in Pakistan now. And Hindi is what they speak, or Hindustani, which is a sort of a casual way of speaking Hindi, which is what many of the Indians speak, Hindi. And my mom knew those languages because she grew up there as well, but my dad had to, and missionaries that come to India, there's a language school up the hill from Woodstock, where many missionaries go to from northern India to learn different languages, and how they read it, basically written the way English is written, but with Indian words, as opposed to the Sanskrit or the way that if you see Hindi written, it's with a line above and lots of lines underneath, and it's a different way of writing than what we do with the ABC. But the books that my dad, the hymn books and stuff, were all written using ABCs, but with Indian words. Does that make sense? Not really.
I couldn't figure out the ABCs.
Okay, so instead of having Pyara, which means love, you would write P-A-Y-R-A. But the real actual Indian way of writing it would be a different alphabet, a different...
Okay. Because the symbols are different.
Right, the symbols were different.
Okay, well, interesting. Well, has any of your family or extended family followed this missionary tradition?
My cousin's son is a missionary, but not to India. my brother's grandson went to Woodstock for 2 years as a junior and senior because he had heard my brother's stories and thought that would be neat to do. But no, there are no missionaries in the family at this time.
Did you and your sister return there for a reunion?
Yes. Well, it wasn't a reunion. We went to my brother's grandson's graduation in 2016 with his with my brother's wife. My brother had passed away by then.
Okay, when you say Woodstock, you know what I think of.
I know. Woodstock School in Missouri.
Okay. All right, anything else you can think of that we want to add here?
I don't know.